welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club podcast where each week, three of us read up on a topic and then discuss it from geeky, nerdy perspectives. This week, however, is a special episode in which two of our reps are going to go head-to-head in a versus episode. I am your referee, your host, Patrick Brem, and today's fight will be between...
I'm Jocelyn, and I am repping Kingdom Hearts 1.
Hi, I'm Taimal Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prefer, and I'll be repping Kingdom Hearts 2.
So I know nothing whatsoever. I guess I know a little bit about Kingdom Hearts, but I have never played either of these games to completion, and therefore I will be the impartial judge of this competition. So each representative will have a few minutes to describe their domain and make their case to me before we launch into a lengthy debate in which they will have a chance to kind of pick apart each other's arguments, and I will be the judge of these arguments. When the dust has settled at the end, I will be deciding a victor of this intense and bloody affair. I will judge your arguments based on how well you can prove that your game is the better game, and how well you can tear apart each other's arguments. Do either of you have anything you would like to say to your opponent before we begin?
You're going down, Chowder.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah!
That was great.
We're going to have to teach Chowder how to trash talk one of these days.
One sometime. Eventually.
So, I guess with that rousing intro done, we should jump in and begin. Jocelyn, why don't you go ahead and start and tell me why Kingdom Hearts 1 is the better game?
Okay, so Kingdom Hearts 1 is not only the first game, but it is definitely the best of the two. So Kingdom Hearts is basically a video game combining Final Fantasy, The World Ends With You, Disney, and soon-to-be Pixar characters. The plot through the entire game is extremely complicated, has a lot of depth, a lot of stuff to look up and look into, and it's just a lot of...
Like, Kingdom Hearts has one of the most convoluted lores out of any franchise I've ever seen.
Yeah. Which is why I think number one is the best one, because it is the most simple of all of the plots. It's a lot easier to follow, and honestly, you don't have a card-based thing that was entered in a game that you don't even... like, have to play necessarily to play the second game. Because that's the thing, Kingdom Hearts 1 and Kingdom Hearts 2, there is a game in between them that is on the Game Boy, right? It was on the Game Boy Advance?
Yeah, Game Boy Advance.
Is that the 358 divided by 2 or some shit like that?
No, it's Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories.
No, that's a different spinoff. Chain of Memories was on the Game Boy Advance.
Game Boy Advance, yeah. And so, in order to play Kingdom Hearts 2 and actually understand half of the plot, you have to play a game on a different console in between.
I would argue against that, but that'll be for my own domain, so
yeah.
Go on.
So basically, it's a really fun game that has a lot of Disney characters, and as a Disney fan, I just love seeing them in weird situations that you normally wouldn't. It is a very dated game. A lot of the mechanics are not what we're used to nowadays, but I still think that both 1 and 2 have the same issue with that. But it's just a fun game where you get to hit things with a keyblade and have a good time.
What is a keyblade exactly?
A keyblade is this really cool sword that just looks like a giant key. But every time you beat a world, you get a new keychain, and it changes what the key looks like. And so, like, you'll go to Nightmare Before Christmas Land, only it's not called that. I think it's just called Halloween Town. And you get this really cool all black keyblade with like a pumpkin on it, and it has like spikes, and your character looks like he just stepped out of Hot Topic.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun.
I mean, yep, pretty much.
Like, it's a fun game, and all the different characters have you get to run around with Donald and Goofy, and Donald tries to save you, but he's just really bad at his job.
So you don't get to control any of your like party, you just control yourself.
Oh no, when you go to sort of. There's like a mix. When you go to different worlds, you can change who you're playing with. So say you end up in the Ariel's underwater world, you can have Ariel on your team instead of Goofy or Donald, but they just kind of follow you. Yeah.
But then, yeah. like, let's say in combat, you only get to choose your moves. You can't tell Donald to heal you.
Correct.
Like, he just does it.
No, you can't.
You can, like, give him potions, and he'll try and use them on everyone, but he's not all that smart. And you can go into the settings and change how they do certain things, but it usually Donald is not the smartest with his potions.
Okay.
Like, he will burn through all his MP, taking down, like, minor stuff.
Yeah.
Which is just, like, not what you want him to be doing.
You'd expect that out of Goofy.
Well, Goofy's defense, Donald is magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying you'd expect Goofy to be stupid and Donald to be smart.
Yeah. That's the thing in these games is at the beginning you get to pick if you're a fighter, a magic user, or defense, and that'll change certain how you earn things throughout the game.
Like, when you level up, it'll affect your stats, how they're orientated and stuff.
Like, in the first game, you don't get to know the health bar of your opponents until you reach a certain level.
Yeah, and you get the scan ability.
Yeah, it's called scan, and you can see how far you have left to kill somebody. If you pick defense, you don't get that until, like, level, like, 18 or something.
Yeah.
When you get it for the other two skills at, like, level 8.
Yeah.
Okay.
You should briefly, like, explain the plot of Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, I was gonna say, can you tell me a little bit more about the story? Because I don't really know anything.
The plot of Kingdom Hearts, you're following this 14-year-old boy in Kingdom Hearts 1 named Sora, who has these two friends, Riku and Kairi. They live on this island, and they kind of want to explore more than just the island, but they don't really know how.
They want more than just this provincial life, you know
exactly.
what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. They want to explore the Great Wide somewhere. It's invaded by these bad guys named Heartless, which are these little black ant-looking creatures.
Yeah.
And during the invasion, Sora obtains the Keyblade, which is like, there's only like two Keyblades, I think, left after this big giant war that they go into in other games. And after that, they somehow arrive in this place called Traverse Town. But that's where he runs into Donald and Goofy, who are trying to find Mickey, because Mickey went missing, and Mickey is the king.
Yep. He's also like a bona fide badass.
Yeah, like, he's like really badass in this game, and it's really funny.
In Kingdom Hearts 2 as well. Like,
does he still talk like, oh, ho, ho?
Yeah, but yep. you actually don't hear him very
and
much.
He's a badass.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he has like this trench coat, and he like kills things, and it's great.
He wears like this dark hood, and like,
is he like fucking the gunslinger from the Dark Tower or some shit?
Kind of, but with
kind of. Like, imagine, like,
that's gonna change that whole book for me.
Remember in the Star Wars prequels when, like, Yoda was, like, kicking ass? Imagine that, but with Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, just, oh boy!
I'm pretty into that.
So they go through...
I'm gonna kill ya!
Yeah. They go through all of these different worlds. There's, like, Ariel, Tarzan, which is...
Oh, fuck yeah.
I hate that level, because you have to, like, swing on vines, and the mechanics are really outdated. So it's really tough.
The Tarzan level is annoying.
That sounds cool as fuck.
And like the thing I love is the graphics are terribly bad to a point where it now makes it funny and great.
Yeah, keep in mind, this was like an early PS2 game. Like,
yeah.
Like, they were just getting out of the PlayStation, so.
Yeah. The graphics are beautifully terrible.
Well, they were pretty good for the time. In a way, they still hold up, but yeah, it shows its age a little bit.
So they go through all of these different worlds trying to defeat the Heartless, because they're infecting all of these worlds, but also to find Mickey. And they also find out along the way that a lot of the Disney villains, including Maleficent, and in the second game, Pete, from the original Mickey characters. They're trying to use the Heartless to capture these maidens called the Princesses of the Heart, which for some reason includes Alice from Alice in Wonderland. But they want to open this door to Kingdom Hearts. She's not a princess.
Okay, she's still nice.
She is nice. Her world is crazy.
Yeah, they want to open something called
the door to Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, which is like this this repository that like all hearts, and keep in mind when Kingdom Hearts refers to hearts, it's like the soul of a person. All hearts come from and will eventually return to, so it's
like heaven almost, or
yeah, it's kind of like an afterlife and a place that creates life.
Yeah.
Rolled up into one.
So what do the villains intend to do when they open this door? Do they want to destroy it?
Phenomenal cosmic power.
Yeah, there's a lot of power related to it, and it can cause, like, the destruction of the world, basically. Your entire point of Kingdom Hearts 1 is to defeat Maleficent, and then you find out, oh no, there's this guy Ansem, who's actually been orchestrating everything. And he's turned Riku kind of against you a little bit, like your best friend. That's the other thing. You're just trying to find your two friends. They disappeared, and you're just trying to find your girlfriend and your boyfriend. There's a lot of romantic subtext between him and Riku. It's beautiful.
Okay, is there like a love triangle going on, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kari and Riku are in love with Sora. That's how it's going down.
Thank you for agreeing with me on that, Chowder.
Must be a good-looking dude.
To be fair, in the games, like when they're first on the island, Riku and Sora are trying to fight over Kairi. But you can kind of tell that Riku is more into Sora than he is Kairi.
I'm going to have to play these games now.
We're all shippers here.
I need to know.
But yeah, that game pretty much ends with you fighting your best friend and defeating this other guy and locking Riku away in the door, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And then you go to Chain of Memories, which is a completely different game.
So you don't even get her back?
You do find Kairi, but you turn into a Heartless, and then you turn back from a Heartless because she hugs you.
And let me tell you something. The moment when Sora turned into a Heartless, that set the lore into, like, the implication that that one moment has on the rest of the Kingdom Hearts series is ridiculous.
It gets so convoluted and so confusing. Like, I had to read Wikipedia stuff before playing Kingdom Hearts 2 because I was so confused.
That is very confusing, but I think that is all the time we have for your domain section.
Yeah.
But we'll get back into that into the discussions. Chowder, why don't you tell me a little bit about Kingdom Hearts 2?
Okay, so Kingdom Hearts 2. Like Jocelyn said, it takes place after Chain of Memories and the first Kingdom Hearts. I would argue that you don't need to play Chain of Memories to get Kingdom Hearts 2. You just need to
do a lot of reading.
You just have to understand there were events that happened in between the two games. And all those events ultimately led to was Sora having to be put into what is effectively cryostasis for about a year. And that there's this group called Organization 13, and there's a guy named Roxas, who is Sora's kinda clone thing called a nobody. I will get into that.
Yeah, you spend the entire tutorial, like 2 hours of gameplay, with Roxas at the beginning, so if you don't play Chain of Memories, you have no idea who you're playing as, because he's not the main character.
Alright, so Kingdom Hearts starts off with you playing as a character named Roxas, and he lives in this place called Twilight Town. For a while, everything seems to be... He seems to have a pretty regular life. He hangs out with friends and stuff. But, like, suddenly the world is falling apart around him, and he's starting to realize, I'm not a real person, and I'm eventually going to have to, like, give up my life so that Sora can basically exist again. And that
Wait,
is...
Chowder, you skipped the best part. You can skateboard in Twilight Town.
Oh, wait, okay, I did play that part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the skateboarding.
And you can, like, deliver letters to birds on a skateboard.
Yeah.
That's, like, my favorite part of the tutorial levels.
Yeah, and, once Sora comes back into the fray, we learn of, like, what Organization 13 is. They are a group of, creatures called Nobodies, which are, let me put it like this. The Heartless are, like, souls that are consumed by darkness. And the husks that are left behind by those Heartless become things called Nobodies, which are basically soulless people.
Okay.
And Organization 13 hopes to get their souls back by opening up Kingdom Hearts and, like, using it to make souls for themselves. But, like, the consequences of that would be tremendous because of the means opening up Kingdom Hearts. So, basically, from there on, Sora, Donald, and Goofy continue their search for King Mickey, but also try to foil Organization 13, and also have to foil Maleficent again because she's back and she's trying to do more Heartless stuff.
Yeah, she cry.
Yeah. So my argument for why Kingdom Hearts 2 is better is for these reasons. First of all, the gameplay is massively improved. In Kingdom Hearts 1, the camera controls are mapped to the R1 and L1 buttons.
Oh.
Yeah.
In Kingdom Hearts 2, it is to the right analog stick.
Good.
By God, does that make a world of difference.
Yeah, you can also, in Kingdom Hearts 1, you can change it to just follow you, which works actually slightly better than using the controls, but it's weird.
Yeah.
It's not great, I will admit.
Yeah. 2, the combat system is massively improved. Like, where Kingdom Hearts 1, it was kind of a repetitive hack and slash. In Kingdom Hearts 2, if you really, like, take the time to learn the system, it becomes really fun, as you can chain together hits, chain together magic spells and attack spells. You actually, like, use, like, these things called limit breaks, where you work together with whoever's on your team to do these flashy attacks. Like, you can, like, say, do a limit break with Mulan and, like, start, like, air juggling Attila the Hun in the air.
The weird thing is, though, they also kept some of the card game-based stuff from Chain of Memories. So, like, in the Pirates of the Caribbean world, you might just turn... There's, like, cards that you have to fight, and they're, like, really confusing to figure out if you haven't played Chain of Memories and know how that gameplay worked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another thing that they improved upon is, like, oh yeah, the boss fights are fantastic in Kingdom Hearts 2.
Oh, yeah.
Like, some of the best. The Grim Reaper fight and, like, a lot of the Pirates of the Caribbean fights are awesome. And also, while Kingdom Hearts 2 marks the point where everything gets complicated, there's also a lot of stuff I like about the Kingdom Hearts 2 story. Like, I love that beginning part with Roxas. I know people have mixed feelings about that, but to me, I loved it because it captures this sort of somber tragedy where, like, Roxas wants nothing more than to live his life and, like, enjoy summer with his friends, but he ultimately comes to realize that just can't be done, and, you know, he ends up having to fight his best friend, Axel, and ultimately just has to accept that he's not just gonna give up his life, he's also gonna be forgotten by everyone he came to care about, except for Axel, because nobody's. And, like, the rest of the Kingdom Hearts story is also pretty good overall, you know? Like, I love Axel's character and his growth. Sora, as usual, is really fun. Yeah, so my argument is simply that Kingdom Hearts 2 improves upon many of the flaws of Kingdom Hearts 1. It's a very sluggish gameplay. And also just happens to have a very gripping story, even if it may be a bit convoluted.
So, in Kingdom Hearts 2, does... It seems like in Kingdom Hearts 1, there's a little bit of a focus on Sora and his life and, like, all his friends and their relationship. How does it expand upon Sora's life? Like, I understand it brings in all these new characters and shows their sides, but does it make his storyline a little bit more complicated or interesting?
Well, it definitely makes his life more complicated, because now you got, like, characters like Roxas who are...
they're a part of him.
They are a part of him, And, you know, he does eventually get to meet Riku again, and, like, his character and Riku's character kind of grows from that. And, I mean, mostly he remains this very energetic, very peppy character. And in many ways, his simplicity perhaps is our grounding element into this world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I do have a question for you, Chowder.
Yep.
Do you remember the world Atlantica in the second one? That's the Ariel's worlds?
Yeah.
So in Kingdom Hearts 1, it's a world that you explore and learn a bunch. In Kingdom Hearts 2, you just dance.
It's a musical. Yeah.
It's kind of like you have to, like, hit the buttons at the right time.
It's like a bunch of quick time events mapped to, like, musical numbers. It's
beautifully terrible because Donald Duck tries to sing.
I don't know, man. Like, whatever question you have, I don't know about that world. That is...
Well, it's just, like, they added a lot to that game. And sometimes I wonder if some of the changes were good or bad.
Yeah.
Like, some of them really improved it, but I think reducing Ariel to a Footloose storyline wasn't great.
Yeah.
Do they repeat a lot of the characters from Kingdom Hearts 1 and Kingdom Hearts 2 in terms of, like, the worlds that you go to, like Ariel's world?
Like, some of them are repeated, like...
Atlantica, Hundred Acre Wood, Agrabah...
Halloween Town... But, like, there's a bunch of new ones, too, like,
Tron?
Tron, Mulan, Pirates of the Caribbean. Pirates of the Caribbean is a particularly good one because...
Lion King,
yes. Actually, Pirates of the Caribbean is, like, a really good level because, like, the bad guys, the pirates, like, they have this mechanic where when they're under where they're only vulnerable when they're, like, under shade and not under the moonlight, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's the worst. It's stupid. They hide in the moonlight, so you can't hurt them.
Well, yeah, but that's, like, part of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, so. Exactly. Well, yeah. You have to take into account the environment that you're fighting in, and, like...
I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and they also have a weakness, particular weakness to, like, magic spells. Like, ice will freeze them in place, and fire will, like, make them jump around because they're on fire. And, like, that's how Kingdom Hearts 2 can be better than Kingdom Hearts 2 in many ways, is that, like, in Kingdom Hearts 1, like, the environment and, like, the tells of the enemy you're fighting don't really matter that much. It's more about just spamming the cure spell until you win by attrition, whereas in Kingdom Hearts 2, you do have to dodge, you do have to take into account your environment, and the cure spell is very much nerfed in this installment, so you do have to actually, like, think about how you fight. So, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Alright, well, I think that's all the time we have for Chowder, so... All right, thank you very much for those rousing arguments. You've each stated your case, and now you must fight to prove who is right and who is wrong. So I guess now I just want you guys to kind of go head-to-head and take apart each other's arguments and say why yours is still better, even though you might have these issues that were brought up.
So my biggest thing for Kingdom Hearts 2 is that I had a really hard time following it when I played through it recently, because I didn't play Chain of Memories in between the two, and I had played them, like, back-to-back. And so I just had there's all of these characters that look vaguely similar.
Yeah, no, don't misunderstand. It's very confusing.
Yeah, the character design for a lot of the Final Fantasy characters are all very, like, there's, like, six characters with silver gray hair.
Yeah.
And they're all in this game. And it's really hard to kind of know and remember the plot because they all kind of blend together.
I feel like that's also a problem just based on, like, the Final Fantasy-ness of it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the characters in that game look similar too.
Well, they are those characters.
Yeah, Final Fantasy has, like, the realistic, operatic kind of look to it.
Yeah. Everybody's got long hair and it's always like silver blonde or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Except for Final Fantasy X, they started to move towards the Hawaiian theme, which was sick.
Well, because like the only people that I remember are like Aqua, who has blue hair. Axel had red hair, I think.
Well, mm-hmm. Aqua and Axel are original characters of Kingdom Hearts. So.
Yeah. And all the other ones have like silver hair. Oh, one girl was blonde. Yeah.
There was a dude with pink hair in there.
Yeah. But it's just, like, a lot of the characters kind of bleed together.
Yeah.
And so it's already a very complicated story that they're trying to tell. And they make it even more complicated by making it so you don't actually know who you're talking to.
It's a particular pain in the ass because there's two people named Ansem, and they're very different characters.
Yeah, but they're also kind of connected.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's Xehanort and Zenmus, which is...
Yeah.
They're also connected, by the way.
And I love Sora as a character, and he doesn't really get a lot of growth in this game compared to his first game.
Yeah.
And I know he in the other games, it's a lot more focused on Sora. But in Kingdom Hearts 2, it's all about the people around him rather than him.
Yeah, Sora's just kind of pulled along for the ride.
Yeah. And so that's something that makes me kind of sad.
Which makes him a good audience surrogate when you think about it.
Yeah.
Just like how the audience is... Well, I'm kind of struggling to grasp everything. So is Sora.
But I did like that there were different worlds that you could go to. But it was confusing when you had to go back through half of them all over again, because they didn't really explain that. It was just like, oh, I thought I finished the game. Nope, I have to go back to every single world and do stuff over again. Which is cool, because it doubles the time that you're playing it. But it was also like... I have to go back to Ariel, because I loved Ariel in the first game, and in this game, it's just A, B, let me shimmy over here.
Anarasi. Anarasi.
They, like, created new songs, too, for it, and it was not, they were not good songs.
No. Something I didn't mention in the domain, but, like, a problem with the first Kingdom Hearts is also that, like, the game developers didn't have a good grasp on, like, cinematic storytelling, and also had, like, technological limitations. So, like, cutscenes will always feel sluggish and will always feel like they go on, a shot will hold on like a half second too long or a second too long, or like there'll be a reaction shot, but the character won't express anything because the model just doesn't have the ability to create facial expressions. Because, like, fun fact about the first Kingdom Hearts, at the time, the technology wasn't there for them to, like, have, like, in-game character models have, like, actual structures for, like, facial expressions. So, like, something they did was, like, they put, like, a 2D texture over a 3D model and, like, have that 2D texture, like, change depending on what expression they need.
Yeah.
So, like, you'd have these, like, beautifully rendered cutscenes, which are almost on par with Disney, but once you get to the gameplay, you have these very static-looking faces, and it's not even the game developer's fault. The technology just wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
But in Kingdom Hearts 2, the storytelling in cutscenes is way better. Like, and I mean on a technical level. Like, it feels like it was competently directed, and the technology is there for, like, characters to express themselves and, you know, to actually be able to act, which is a big plus for Kingdom Hearts 2, I would say. Because, like, Kingdom Hearts as a series has a great voice acting cast. So, like, you'd have these, like, great performances coming out of very stiff bodies. So,
Yeah. I, like, the art is something that is very limited in Kingdom Hearts 1, I will admit. Clayton is, like, the most terrifying thing to look at when you're in Tarzan's world, because his face is just... Oh, God, it is terrifying. But that's actually why I'm excited for the third one, is Kingdom Hearts 2, tech-wise, looks so much cleaner than Kingdom Hearts 1. And then Kingdom Hearts 3 looks like a movie.
Goddamn, Kingdom Hearts 3 looks good.
My question, I guess, is how much time passed between the two games?
So Kingdom Hearts 1 came out in... Hold on, I have the date right here. 2002.
Yep.
Okay.
Kingdom Hearts 2 came out in 2005.
This is a pretty decent jump, but they were both on the same platform, right? PS2?
Yeah.
Yeah, same platform.
Okay.
And then Kingdom Hearts 3 will be out next year in January on the PS4 and Xbox. For
Xbox One.
Yeah.
And I thought I saw something about an eventual port to the Switch, but I might be wrong.
I think that was also... Yeah, they're trying to make it all of the games.
Yeah.
Which is nice. It's more inclusive.
Yeah, 3 years may not sound like a lot of time, but keep in mind... Like, Square Enix, like, released a bunch of games in between that time. Not Kingdom Hearts game, just games in general, like Final Fantasy stuff and what have you. So that was a lot of time for them to, like, figure out the tech of the PlayStation 2 and, like, really make it work by the time they got to Kingdom Hearts, so.
And definitely it feels like it gave them the opportunity to really improve upon their formula for not only the combat, being able to add things like chaining them together and stuff. But I guess my question is more along the lines of, even though Kingdom Hearts 2 is more refined, can you really slight the first game for not having these options when the PlayStation 2 was pretty new of a console, as well as the fact that it's like their first foray into this game?
I would actually say that the combat isn't as basic as Time Will makes it sound for the Kingdom Hearts 1. There is a lot of stuff where you can do... different magic. You can actually change certain stats and make things... It is a lot of still of, like, A mashing, but there is... You can make it more complicated by going in and adding certain feats when you earn them and learn them so that you can do cooler stuff. It's just not as combo-y as Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah, I don't want to give the wrong impression that, like, Kingdom Hearts has no depth. Like, there's a lot of really great abilities like Arcanum and, like, the spells are there, but, like, when you compare 1 to 2, the spells in 1 don't quite work as well, where, like, Fire, Blizzard, and Thunder are really just all just kind of damagey spells, whereas, like, in Kingdom Hearts 2, Fire is for crowd control, Blizzard is for, like, heavy hitting stuff, and Thunder is for, like, quick shots. And also, like, Kingdom Hearts 1 makes heavy use of, like, the cure spell, which is just heal yourself, whereas Kingdom Hearts 2 has, like, a lot of useful spells like Reflect, which, like, throws damage back at enemies, so, like, especially on harder difficulties and harder boss fights, that is a godsend.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, a lot of the skills you can learn in Kingdom Hearts 1, uses up the same MP that the spells use, so you're constantly like trying to think of like, do I really want to have this when I want to be using Cure for the fifth time again?
Yeah, it's a lot of balance.
Yeah, whereas in Kingdom Hearts 2, you have like a drive bar for like when you want to use drive skills. You have a limit break bar. You've got an MP bar for when you want to use spells, you know? So yeah, like if you're willing to dig for it, Kingdom Hearts 2 reveals itself to have a lot more depth because it just has like the systemic structures in place for you to like go further in depth, while as Kingdom Hearts 1, it has some depth, but like ultimately it doesn't quite have the satisfaction that the second one does.
So this is an issue that I have with like early Final Fantasy games, and I'm assuming the Kingdom Hearts games, is that the storyline is very linear and there aren't a lot of side quests. Is that the case for, did they add more options to do things besides a main story in Kingdom Hearts 2 versus Kingdom Hearts 1?
In Kingdom Hearts 1, there's a lot of stuff that you can go back and do before you beat the final boss, so you can unlock Keyblades that may not have necessarily been part of the main storyline. There's a thing called the 100 Acre Woods, where it's Winnie the Pooh, and you don't have to play any of the Winnie the Pooh pages in order to win the game.
You can just play all sorts of like little mini games in the 100 Acre Woods,
and it unlocks like special things for you if you do that. There's also like there's a subplot about the 101 Dalmatians being missing, and that's in all of the games to my knowledge, where you have to, as you're going through the game, you find these boxes of puppies. And so you'll just find more and more Dalmatians, and if you find all of them, you get a reward.
Yeah, like a secret cutscene that, like, hints at, like, future games.
That's pretty cool.
And there's other things where, like, they have these things called Trinities, where if you are with Donald and Goofy...
Yeah, keep in mind, Trinities are only in the first game. They're not in the second game.
Yeah, they replaced it more with that trick thing that you were talking about in combat, is kind of how they replaced it. But you would go, and they had these little marks on the ground... And you could find potions, you could find Dalmatians using these special trinities of the three of you together. But there was times where you might be in a level and you would see a trinity that you haven't learned yet. Or you don't have Donald and Goofy with you, so you have to go back later to do those marks once you've learned them or have everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have a problem with the trinity marks, because like in the first game, the trinity marks only work when you have Donald and Goofy on your team.
Yeah.
So like the trinity marks... actively discouraged you from like putting like other characters on your team, like Aladdin or Tarzan or whomever, really.
Oh, see, I saw it as a reason to go back to the world even though you've beaten it.
What's present in both games are secret boss battles where, like, for example, you can like go back to the clock tower in Peter Pan and like that'll turn into a Heartless that you gotta fight, which is a blast.
Yeah, and then in the Colosseum. So there's a Hercules level in both of them.
Yeah.
At least in the first one, I can't quite remember if it is in the second. It's basically a training combat zone where you're at the Colosseum and you're just training and fighting all of these different creatures in a tournament style.
Yeah, and like do well enough and you can like fight characters like Cloud from Final Fantasy VII
or
Sephiroth. Now that's a surreal moment.
Yeah, Sephiroth is like the hardest one to beat, but people don't know that some of them you have to play enough and get to it, where you don't realize that it's something you can actually do until you do it, basically. So there is a lot of side questy stuff that you can do in both games.
Yeah, but like...
it's just a little more limited in one because of the nature of the game and the restrictions of the year time.
Yeah, although actually I would say one is actually less linear than... two, because in one they emphasize platforming more, so there's a three-dimensionality to the levels, which it can make them kind of confusing, but in other ways it can be fun when you get like the high jump and the glide abilities, and it's fun to navigate through those worlds, whereas two is a bit more linear. But
and in one, I know that there are some, you can do a thing called summoning in one and two where you can summon a character and they'll do different things depending on who they are. Three of them you get just as you go through the game normally, but there are three or four others that you have to get by doing side quests. So you can get, like, Genie will appear, and he'll be he'll do, like, these magic mana bubble things so you can respawn mana quicker. Or Tinkerbell will heal you while she flies around.
One of the funnier ones is Bambi. You can summon Bambi.
Yeah.
And it's like little baby Bambi, too. So, like, you can summon Bambi, and Bambi will, like, roll around and give you, like, MP.
Or you can summon Dumbo. The only one that was really cool, though, is you can summon Mushu in the first one.
Oh, hell yeah.
Even though you don't go to Mulan's area. He's one of the ones you have to unlock specially. But in Kingdom Hearts 2, he remembers you from the first game.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually a really good touch.
If you forgot to go get him in the first one, though, you're like, wait, I could have gotten Mushu? But, yeah.
That's a nice little Easter egg.
Yeah, that was a nice touch that they did.
So, we actually have a lot of listener engagement for today's episode. If you, dear listener, would like to submit some of your own, you can comment on our weekly Facebook posts or send us an email at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com, I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure.
Or just go to our Facebook and leave a comment. It's a lot easier for us. So let me get right into these listener questions.
There are so many.
Yeah. The first one comes from our very own Ryan Mossbarger, a new addition to our crew. So thank you for still engaging with us. His question is, in trying to explain this game to others, have you ever been able to do it without looking like an insane person? I've tried several times and have yet to do it without looking like this. And then he sends a picture from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Of Charlie Day trying to explain his conspiracy theory, just looking like an animal. So I guess I would pass that off to you. Do you ever have any ability to do it without looking insane?
Well, actually, let me ask you this, Pat. Did you feel that way when Chowder was explaining it earlier?
I mean, less that you're insane and more that the game is super confusing. But at the same time, I feel like there are all these subplots and side things that, like, this love triangle that maybe won't be a love triangle. Like, maybe there's more stuff like that that I don't really understand. I would say that you probably don't look as crazy as Charlie Day does in this, but...
Fun fact, like, in a previous episode, I repped Kingdom Hearts for a domain. It was the episode on, like, extended universes.
I remember that episode.
Yeah, yeah. There was a cut bit from there where I tried to explain the Kingdom Hearts plot to Colin. It ran for, like, 14 minutes.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Like, the game is super complicated, but it's rewarding when you get to go through it and figure it out for yourself.
Yeah, but, like, keep in mind, when I was explaining to Colin, that was just me, A, getting into, like, the nitty-gritty details, and B, kind of me playing it up for, like, comedic effect. If I had to, like, explain Kingdom Hearts to someone, and, like, I had to boil it down into something simpler, I feel like I could confidently do that. Ultimately, just keep in mind, a bad guy wants to do bad things involving Kingdom Hearts. Good guys want to stop him, you know? It's ultimately a simple good versus evil tale at the end of the day. It's still Disney.
There's actually a, like, short video. It's this guy explaining Kingdom Hearts, basically by going off of a trailer for Kingdom Hearts 3, where it's pretty much, Venmo, it's you! Who the fuck is Venmo? And then it's Mike Wazowski! It's
Pro ZD, yeah, I've seen that video.
The entire game is just, like, these characters you don't quite remember doing something crazy, but your favorite Disney characters at the same time. So it's a mixed bag. It's a fun time.
Yeah.
So our next question comes from, and I really hope this isn't some weird last name that's going to trick me, but it's Sam Bowles. It's funny you pose this question now. My boyfriend has been playing it through the series, and I've been watching as he goes. My conclusions, I do not like Kingdom Hearts, either of them. A lot of it feels like the video game analog of a young adult novel. Outside of a really great first chapter of Kingdom Hearts 2, it's very, very dry Japanese game with a shoehorning in of Disney and Final Fantasy characters, which I think is where a lot of the draw lies. My question would be, ahem, does this game exist solely driven by its pop culture references? Do you think this game can be made as a standalone game without Disney, Final Fantasy characters, and setting?
Honestly, I don't think you could, because, like, well, for one thing, like, a big draw for Kingdom Hearts is, like, it has this very unique visual aesthetic. See, like, when they made the art style for Kingdom Hearts, they try to find a happy medium between Disney and Final Fantasy. And, like, if you know anything about the two, Disney's, like, you know, very whimsical fairy tales and cartoony stuff. And Final Fantasy is operatic fantasies and hard sci-fi stuff. And, like, when they brought that together, it created this really fun, unique aesthetic.
Yeah, it's like a colorful, beautiful mash of, like, chains and trip pants and big zippers. Shoes and nice. Zippers. And I will say that, like, part of the appeal for me was the Disney characters, seeing them in a way that you normally don't get to.
Yeah.
Because it also does get to expand a little bit on these characters that you've only seen in their movies, but in a way that's fulfilling.
Yeah, like, you get to see, like, Beast, like, barge into a castle to, like, save Belle, which is pretty badass. You get to see Mickey Mouse kicking ass, which is ridiculously hilarious.
Yeah.
You get to see, like, Donald, like, point and go, "It's Sephiroth!" And it is the silliest moment, because if you know who Sephiroth is, he's like this tall, long-haired pretty boy with a single gothic angel wing coming out.
Yeah.
And here he is.
Have this lispy Donald Duck.
Well, yes. And then there's also, like, in Kingdom Hearts 2, there's a world that's basically retro Disney, where it's all black and white. Oh,
yeah, I love that one.
And it's, like, one of the coolest animation fight things, because you have to, like, fight this fire and these fire trucks that are trying to attack you, and you need to save this burning building from burning down. And it's a bunch of these little mini games that are all really much tied to what made the classic Disney cartoons really good. And so it gives you that really cool nostalgic reminder of these cartoons that people watch growing up. But it's like a really fun way to utilize the aesthetic of Disney in a video game that works and actually is pretty timeless. Like, both games I can play now and enjoy.
Yeah. So I think from an outsider's perspective, like, I don't really know these games all that well, but the main appeal for a lot of these games when I was younger was all of these characters, and that's what drew me in. And I would say it's less about them shoehorning in the characters, and maybe the Final Fantasy characters feel shoehorned in, but the Disney characters are part of the main appeal of the game, and I think it just didn't translate into today's society. Like, we've grown up now. That kind of appeal is gone to people who are just now getting into it. It was more of something when, like, you were young to get into it, so.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, even nowadays, like, that is the weirdest crossover I have ever seen.
This is true, yeah.
Like, they couldn't be any more different, and yet they somehow managed to make it all come together into this weird mess of a lore, mess of a plot.
I definitely think it'll be interesting to see how well Kingdom Hearts 3 does, because we're now in a world where Disney does put out their own games of these characters.
This is true. They had the whole fucking, like, Disney...
Yeah, with the little characters that you place. Yeah,
yeah, Disney Infinity.
The action figures. Yeah, Disney Infinity, where you had to put them on this, like, portal, and then they'd go into your game if you bought them in the real world.
They also did, like, Tangled has a video game that's, like, an actual thing.
But, like, it's not a very good video game.
None of the games are very good, like...
Yeah, yeah, like, here's the thing. Kingdom Hearts is made by actual game developers.
This is true.
They know how to make a game.
Although, that SpongeBob game that came out when the movie came out, that shit was lit. Like, I played the fuck out of that game. That shit was pretty
lit. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if the people who buy Kingdom Hearts 3 are the people who just grew up with Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 and were really into it and are excited to finally have the third one. Or if it'll actually bring in new people other than the people who've already been waiting 10 years for it.
Yeah.
So I got one more listener question and then we'll go to the end. So this question comes from Nick Hidalgo. It says, "Hi, another big Kingdom Hearts fan here. Probably the number one reason the series has hit so hard for me and kept playing all these years is the connection I personally felt as a kid. It was relatable, teaches great relationship lessons, and puts it into satisfying to play package. Fast forward to now, I still play this series with nostalgia out of the way because looking at the story as an adult, it's complex, full of drama, twists, and turns. The Disney worlds tend to be fluff, but provide fantastic segments into the main story, and the most important part of the series, the boss fights. Hands down, my favorite fights ever are in these games." I guess that's not really a question, it's more of a comment, but... I guess, do you guys agree that the boss fights are the most important part of the series?
It's not the most important part of the series, I feel, but it is a hell of a draw. Like, boss fights are a blast in Kingdom Hearts. Like, one, like, when you're fighting, like, characters you recognize, like Sephiroth or Ursula or Maleficent. Like, Maleficent has a pretty fun boss fight where she, like, turns into the dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a really great one in Kingdom Hearts 1.
Or even if, like, you're fighting original stuff like Big Heartless or, like, one of the Organization 13 members, the way those fights are designed, it's still, like, really fun and really flashy to, like, beat those guys. So, yeah.
The thing with what he was saying, though, about as a kid learning those lessons and stuff, though, I really agree. I think Kingdom Hearts is a great game for, like, younger kids to start out on, to learn a start to game mechanics and, like, how to move around in a game. But also, like, there's a lot of good messages in it. And a kid will get a lot of different things out of it than you would as an adult. And I like that there is a simple plot and a complex plot, so that no matter what type of gamer you are, no matter your age, you'll enjoy the games for what you find out of them that you like.
Yeah, like, I remember as a kid, like, when the first game touched on, like, the idea that, like, all people, like, have light and darkness within them, and, like, you know, the idea that, like, we're not all just, like, cackling villains or unambiguous good guys. I don't know. It helped explain that to me in a easy way, and in a world where it's kind of hard to explain gray areas to a kid,
it does a good job.
Alrighty. We have now witnessed our representatives battle it out, but our debate has come to a close. Each person now has 30 seconds to issue a closing statement before we proceed to the ratings. So, Jocelyn, give me your 30-second spiel about why Kingdom Hearts 1 deserves to win.
Kingdom Hearts 1 deserves to win because it is a fun, light game that is pretty easy to follow and is good for all ages. It has some really cool characters and some really fun interactions that you wouldn't get otherwise, and it's the entire reason we even have Kingdom Hearts 2. That's it.
Well, you came in under time, so kudos for you. All right, Chowder, why don't you follow that up with a 30-second spiel about why Kingdom Hearts 2 is better than 1.
And here we go. All right, so Kingdom Hearts 2 deserves to win because it makes many gameplay improvements over Kingdom Hearts 1, such as the camera controls. It also has, like, a very in-depth combat system that's a blast to get through. And its more complicated story lets it have more characters with a lot of depth to it. So even if it is more convoluted, it has a sort of depth to that too, if you're willing to dig for it.
With that said, let's move on into the ratings section. So I'm going to give you guys the opportunity to rate each other on a scale of 1 to 5. I want to save Keyblades for the golden star. It'll be like our golden Keyblade.
What is the name of that fruit, Chowder, that they give to Kairi?
Starfruit, I think they were calling it.
I think so.
We'll do 1 to 5 Heartless or some shit like that.
Ooh, yeah, Heartless.
Heartless works, yeah.
Let's do 1 to 5 Heartless. So, Jocelyn, give Chowder a nice rating.
Of 1 to 5 Heartless on, like, how he did? Or yeah. His... Okay.
I would say how he did as, like, an arguer, not necessarily his game, you know?
Yeah. I would give Chowder 3 out of 5 on the scale.
Ooh. That hurts.
I'm average. Okay.
That digs deep.
Do you want me to explain why, or is just...
Yeah, okay. I want you to explain why.
Okay. Sorry, this is the first actual episode I've had to give ratings on.
It's okay.
Okay, so, you make good points, but it's hard to get a word in to actually fight back.
I'm sorry.
Which makes it feel like I don't get as much of time on the floor to say my side, which is why you're just average. But you made some really good points, and you conceded to when I had good points, so...
So, Chatter, yeah, you should give Jocelyn 1 now. 1 to 5 Heartless.
I give it 4 Heartless. Jocelyn made a lot of good points, and she was very patient with me. Like, the Skype feed is, like, kind of laggy and wonky on my end, so...
Same.
I'm sorry if I talked over too much. But yeah, no, she made her point well, and I don't know, there was a lot of there was a lot of fun back and forth between us about Kingdom Hearts, so
yeah, four it was a good time. Woo.
All right, now the time has come for I, your illustrious host, to pick the Gold Star Student Award, and today I will be handing out the Golden Keyblade.
Yes!
This is a very tough decision for me, and while I do agree with Jocelyn's point that without Kingdom Hearts 1 there would be no Kingdom Hearts 2, I must concede that Kingdom Hearts 2 sounds like the better game to me, so I must give this award to Chowder.
Hooray!
And that's not only because you can skateboard in Kingdom Hearts 2. I just want to put that out there.
Sweet, oh baby, don't go.
That and Mulan's my favorite Disney movie, so like the fact that you can actually go there in Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah, the world expansion is really good, except for Tron. The Tron world is just kind of weird.
Yeah, they really shouldn't have put Tron in there. I will go on record to say that.
Yeah, the level of the Mulan level itself I wasn't a fan of, but like getting to fight with Mulan and like...
It was just cool to be there.
Yeah, have like this crazy combo move with her.
Yeah, the limit break thing sounded really cool as well.
Yeah.
All right, well, and the whole thing with like Organization 13 and adding all those other characters in. All in all, if I were to play Kingdom Hearts, I think I would be looking forward to Kingdom Hearts 2 the most. Although maybe the real winner of Kingdom Hearts, which game is better, would have been that motherfucking game that comes in between them that actually explains Kingdom Hearts 2.
Chain of Memories, it's very card game
Chain
based.
Chain of Memories, there we go.
So it's not...
Okay. It's a very different gameplay system. It's not the hack and slash RPG.
Point is, if I ever decide to play them, I'm playing Chain of Memories in between.
You can do it, I think, on the mix that they did of all of the games put together.
Yeah.
I'll find a ROM if I ever want to.
And if not, you can probably emulate it too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's what I was planning on doing. But that about wraps it up. I just want to go back for a second. I do not condone emulating games. It's illegal. Whatever. Don't do it. However, a lot of these older games I can't possibly find in stores anymore, and I'm out of options, so that's why I do it. Anyway, that about wraps it up. Thank you for listening to the Common Geeking Program. I'm your host, Patrick Bram, and I'm a dirty thief. You can find me at Patty Ice Official on Instagram. Again, I've been joined by...
I'm Jocelyn Barkenhagen. You can find me at Fan All About It on YouTube. I think also on Twitter.
You have a YouTube channel?
Yes.
When did you make this?
A while ago. We have like over 700 followers.
Bro, say words to me when you do these things, and I would have subscribed. There you go.
Yeah, I think we're at like 708 now.
15.
Ooh, it's gone up.
Neat.
Yeah, that's where you can find me. Fan All About It. What about you, Chowder?
Yeah, I'm Taimul Chowdhury. You can find me on Twitter, at Taimul Chowdhury. I do art stuff there, so yeah.
Sick. Next week, our episode will be hosted by Chowder. Why don't you tell us what you're hosting about?
Yeah, next week is about the video game Celeste. It is a 2D massacre platformer with a really soothing art style. And we're going to be talking about difficult games as a challenge as a storytelling method. So yeah, tune in for that.
I have a lot of opinions on this topic, and I submitted a very lengthy listener question, so I hope it tickles your fancy. But everybody else, be sure to tune in on August 31st, which is when that episode will air. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, at Geeking Program. Any engagement, such as sharing a post, tagging us, or tweeting hashtag CGP, will enter you into a raffle where you could pick the topic for a future episode. Reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is a critical help to growing our show, and we'll read any new reviews on the air. Anyway, thanks for listening, subscribing, sharing, everything. We love you, and we'll talk to you next week. Later!
Woo!
Ciao!
Adios!
Muchachos!
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Patrick Bram, joined by the representatives, Taimul Chowdhury, and special guest, Jocelyn Barkenhagen. This episode is sponsored by Disney. That is just blatantly and legally untrue. Please do not quote me on that. podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. Next week, we'll be talking about the game Celeste and challenging gameplay, so be sure to tune in for that on August 31st. And as always, thank you for listening to this.
So we have one final comment, and I honestly don't understand why I'm reading this, but Liam Madden says, I prefer the British version of The Office. Have whatever reaction you feel to that, but...
Wait, what?
Is that the entire thing that Liam said?
That's literally all he said, was I prefer the British version of The Office. That's all he said. So,
okay,
I guess thank you for bringing that up in a Kingdom Hearts episode. Anyway...